Not My Family is a highly fictionalized, loosely autobiographical narrative that describes generational bad will, poor choices, financial malfeasance, and even murder. The generational craziness is propagated like a tidal wave threatening to drown everything in the deluge. Secrets are buried deep in lies, pacts sealed in blood. The truth concealed unto death, just to exert some control. I personally hate rubberneckers. It's kind of like, or this book is kind of like rubbernecking. The 30-mile pileup or 30-car pileup on I-75. You want to look away, but you're drawn to the carnage. Join me as the protagonist progresses along self-discovery, and she recreates her identity, and she discovers how to go home again. Not My Family can be purchased at FeliciaBaxter.com or directly from the author. Just navigate to Facebook, look up Dale's Angels, Inc., and click Buy Now for your autographed copy. Now, let's return to the podcast.
God of glory, Lord of love, hearts unfold like flowers before thee, healthy as the sun above. Melt the clouds of sin and sadness, drive the darker down away. Giver of immortal hands, fill us with the light.
Welcome to the show, everyone. And what's on tap today? What are we going to talk about in today's episode of What is Tennessee Fro Reading? As always, it seems like the agenda or the itinerary for the show is always in flux, kind of like my travel plans. But as the writer, producer, director of the show, I can make it as fluid as I want it. So I'm going to start out today with my daily affirmations, go on to the Unwoke Chronicles, who I would invite and disinvite to the barbecue. I want to do something called the making of chatterbooks and the winebrary, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. It's moving on from Goodreads, but an online electronic bookstore. I'll talk about my book in the sequel and also my answers to the Proust questionnaire that I read today in Vanity Fair, and then we'll just wrap it all up with a conclusion. So stay tuned for this episode of What Tennessee's Fro is Reading, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome back to the show. Well, this part is something that I should never not do each day. I should reflect on happiness and being happy. It truly is the end of stinking thinking, in the words of Bishop T.D. Jakes. I always need to reflect in what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for my life. I get to do something that I actually like to do, and I get paid to do it. I get to work from home. I get to read. And then I also get to write about reading. I mean, how cool is that? I wish that all of my emotions would feed happiness, because that should be the main issue, or should be my main goal, is just to simply be happy. And to simply be happy, you have to simplify. I will focus on what I want to happen and what I need to happen and what I need to do to get there. If that means I want to write and get paid to write, I need to get on my hustle. Therefore, my Fiverr account, and I'm hopefully will soon be recognized and to be able to post, tweet, and blog for others, because I would do it anyways. But at least this way I get paid to do it. I would be great at being a POW movement, actually in the job that I have now. And I will have the pink pen out to do revisions if I need to. I refuse to play the same game that others play, because it's definitely a waste of time. And now, let's take a pause for the calls. Hey y'all, do you want to get fit, fab, and firm? Or do you just want to up your workout apparel game? Or do you just need a comfortable pair of yoga pants to run after your kids while you drop them off at the drop-off service? Why don't you navigate to http://dalesangelsinc.com/gyam.shtml. Or while you're on the site, you can also see the latest in available apparel, hydration, and jewelry at that location. Or if you navigate to my Nerd Cool sub tab, you'll also find SodaStream, where they had actual promotions through Memorial Day. However, there is an ongoing 10% off of your first order if you navigate to the site and sign up. There are 3 new sparkling water bundles on the site, as well as new flavors, peach iced tea and honey iced tea. I can't wait to test all of those out myself. And in advance, thank you for your interest, clicks, and purchases. Hi, this is Tennessee Fro, and welcome back to the podcast. I always have, or I've been saying this for the last couple of podcasts. I think I'm in preparation for something greater than what I'm doing now. But while I have full artistic control of the podcast, I can change the agenda around based on my whims. And I can add and subtract things. But this is one of the things I wanted to add, because I am no longer in full-time practice. But you can take the girl out of the hospital, but you can't take the hospital out of the girl. I always have an affinity for medicine and for science. And what I've been doing full time for the past 2 years is being a clinical advisor, and I get to not only research the science of medicine, but also how we're going to pay for it. And recently, I have been schooled on something very simple, that I want to become a part of Tennessee's Fro Medical Minute, because this is what this part of this segment of the podcast is to detail. One of them is changes in insurance, what to expect with the 2020 election, and also just to talk about natural and holistic prescriptions and treatments for common ailments. The first one, of course, as I said, is the number one thing, or something that I wanted to kind of go over. As a clinical advisor, I get to say they will pay for that. We're not going to pay for that. Is it cosmetic? Is it covered? Is it not covered? One of the things that I have been confronted with probably in the last couple of years is something called the difference between in-network and out-of-network. A lot of the commercial insurers and the big ones, Aetna, United, all of the Blues, state-run, Healthmark, Caremark, et cetera, et cetera, they all have direct relationships with facilities and networks of facilities. They contract for rate, how much they're going to pay, and what they're going to pay for. And sometimes that is even made even more complicated with the institution of Obamacare and the exchanges. How much do you know about your policy, especially when you go and you're sick? In an emergency, no one expects you to be able to know the details of your policy, or you to basically pull it up on your phone and to take a look at it. However, I can truly say, if you keep going back to the same facility, the facility should know if they are in network and not in network, because they got their fingertip on what in every single commercial payer, even Medicare, what they're going to pay, when they're going to pay it, and how fast they're going to get their scratch. So, if you are admitted, hospitalized, for whatever reason beyond the emergency room or the urgent care, and you are in your right state of mind, you may want to have that discussion with whoever is coming in the room and wants you to sign your life away as you go into the hospital. Are y'all in network? Can I hold it till you transfer me across town to in network? You may want to ask them that, because you may be two things. You may have to come out your own pocket for the difference in pay if it's caught before your discharge. And if you are truly stable and they have a bed at the in network facility, and you better believe that commercial payer is going to know about it. You better make sure they know, they will know that, because you could be on the hook for tens of thousands of dollars. And I don't know about y'all, but I'm not fitting to give any hospital or any clinic or any urgent care my hard-earned money. That's just not going to happen. I will tell people from jump, duct tape it. I can hold it till I get to in-network facility, but that's just me, and I'm crazy. The second thing is, this may be TMI, but I don't care. Athlete's foot. Shower shoes are a must in any communal bathroom situation. Case in point, me. For most of you know, I have been Westward Fro before I came screaming back to North Carolina. I lived in my RV for almost 2 years. For a very rough minute, especially when we had that deep freeze when I came back to North Carolina, I could not run the water because they did not want to fill up the tank or the well that actually at RV vacation, they did not want to fill up the underground septic tank. So I had to, and I couldn't, and I didn't want to run. I didn't know how long the freeze was going to last, and I didn't want to continually take a long shower to actually fill up my black water tank and gray water. In RV speak, in a recreational vehicle, there's only a certain amount of capacity that it can hold wastewater. So I did not want to overwhelm my own system as far as the whole issue of just taking a shower. So the only day that I would go and I would have to take a shower before I would have to get on the road in the cold, I completely forgot my shower shoes in the RV, but I was not going back to that RV to get the shower shoes. So for whatever reason, for 2 days in a row, I took a shower in the communal bathroom without my shower shoes. Slight problem. I noticed within about a couple of weeks or 3 weeks after that, I developed a singular case of athlete's foot, right foot. Athlete's foot is so hard to treat. It is itchy and it's funky. And even after repeated at least two or three treatments, I've noticed that I could get it all the way down to the toe jam being have disappeared. But what I noticed is it continues to flare up. I have found that the Lotrimin spray works really well. And there also is a natural deodorant in it. And it almost works for the itching on contact. However, what I did notice is one day where I used my essential lavender oil in the bath soak as well as my Epsom salt, I also noticed that it also beat back the itching and the inflammation that it was also associated with my current flare of athlete's foot. Lo and behold, Scientific America in 2011 also reported that there is a direct link between resistant topical fungal infections and the use of distilled lavender oil. And in fact, of the genus Lavadula, and with the increase in resistance to antifungal drugs, there may be efficacy shown in the topical and the usage or prescription of essential lavender oil in the treatment of tinea corporis, cruris, and pedis, which is the tinea versicolor that you can see on your skin, jock itch, and athlete's foot. And if any of you have ever used essential lavender oil, you also know it's an awesome deodorant. So not only can you control the funk of athlete's foot, you can also have an effective treatment for your athlete's foot. And I can actually testify to its efficacy. And it also has a calming effect because as you smell the lavender, it actually brings you back to, it just relaxes you. So I am going to go online to promote the usage of the medicinal use of athlete's foot in topical treatment of fungus. And I'm also going to post this on my The Chubby MD site, and you guys can use it and let me know how it goes. Thanks. We'll be right back. Unless you lived under a rock, there was a whole bunch of crazy stuff going on in the news this week from the Iranian guard seizing British tankers in the Straits of Suez just because they can. There seems like they're always trying to flex and trying to provoke something. You got the dumbass in chief telling four lawmakers who they're called the squad, who actually three were actually born here, and the only Somalian from Minnesota of all places, she has been in the country for what, 15, 13, 15 years, which is longer than his own wife, and the dumbasses in Greenville telling her to go back. Just because you disagree with the policies and you complain about the policies doesn't mean that you are not a patriot. Does that make sense? There's certain things that I don't think that we should be doing. I don't think we should be burning the American flag. I don't know about the whole taking a knee issue after being in the military. I don't know about all that. And I say the Pledge of Allegiance because I honestly believe in that. But I don't agree with you trying to bully dissent into silence because you just get sycophants and you allow a demagogue to just run amok and run the country into a ground. And this is the opposite of what is great. And we criticize because we know we can do better. The things that that are going on now just doesn't make a whole bunch of sense. And it's so crazy because there was someone leaked the Puerto Rican governor, somebody leaked racist and homophobic tweets. Well, why you gotta actually put it on the DL? Because we got a guy in power now just saying all kinds of stuff out of his butt. The ICE raids. They're raiding people's houses without warrants, which is completely illegal. It could break your spirit if you let it, but it can't. In the end, you have to believe that sanity will prevail. And I actually, this goes into my next part, as always, who I would invite and disinvite to the barbecue. I still want to, of course, Pete Buttigieg is always, the invitation to him is always open. But Nancy Pelosi said something that I thought compelling. It's not so much he's a racist. We knew that. We need to call him a criminal. And because that is what is going to get him out of the White House and will not allow him to be reelected. This kind of smells of what went on with Richard Nixon. He actually served his term. He was on tap to serve a second term. And then Watergate broke and he was forced to resign. So I'm just hopeful that he will talk himself out of a nomination, or he'll talk himself out of winning. Hopefully, he'll talk himself out of winning the election, because the alternative is his Grand Dragon second. So I'm just happy that the rest of the sane thinking Americans will wake up and will vote his ass out of office. But who else is on tap to come to the barbecue and we need to take another look at? Tom Steyer, the multimillionaire. Kamala Harris is doing an amazing job. I think JoJo is going to talk himself out of a nomination because third time is probably not going to be the charm. He keeps saying stupid stuff, and I think, and again, he just is going to be annoying. It's not going to be a given that he's going to be given the nomination, because I think there are some great people that are actually running and that are making true strides. Bernie and Elizabeth, they're just crazy, and Bernie's just too old. but I think they would make a really interesting conversation and a political salon of sorts that I would love to be a fly on that wall just to listen to all of them talk. Hello, welcome back to the podcast. Well, listen, I have had a portion of my podcast dedicated to all of the books that I am reading and that I have put on my to-be-read list. Originally, it started out as my Amazon / Libby's list, which is the list of books that you can actually check out. It's like a wish list for the public library. But then recently, I was reacquainted with Goodreads. I didn't know that you could actually have a profile, as far as an author's profile, on Goodreads. And it's kind of like the LinkedIn for authors. You can talk about books that you've read, do the reviews of those books, and interact with your colleagues. Well, as a new author, I had no idea about it, and I just got back into it. Evidently, I had created a profile years ago, and once I had linked it up with my Kindle / Amazon account, it was a great way for me to get my book out there and for me to talk about my book, but also the other books that I've actually read. This past weekend, I've just had another misadventures, and I actually visited one of the local wineries, as well as one of the used bookstores. There's a bookstore right on Broad called All Books that's ran by this really cranky proprietor. But it was during this time that I was like, well, first of all, she was inadvertently inspiring because she was so cranky, and her book, her spot was just such a hodgepodge that even though I actually felt instantly happy that when I walked in, she was instantly off-putting because she was just so cranky, and she had like this really suspect, and like I didn't know what I was looking at. I realized very rapidly that there really wasn't kind of a rhyme or reason to it, but I was able to suss out historical fiction, historical biographies from the presidents. Well, I was overwhelmed with all the wool that was in the place. She was an avid knitter. Even there was like a loom in the back of the spot. She wasn't just grumpy with me. She was grumpy with these other women who basically walked up out of there and they didn't buy anything. And I actually bought several books, a couple of medical books, antique medical books, as well as a first trade edition from Toni Morrison. And I was struck by the fact that there is no place to just sit and read. I'm going to check out Chad's Records in another bookstore in town to see if they are basically the same thing. But this experience basically had me start dreaming of chatterbooks and Winebrary. I think I started thinking about this when I was still working in Kentucky, but I think I've actually found a potential spot for it, and it's in the place of All Books. This owner looks like she could stand to retire, and I would love to be able to take over the management of the store because there's not a place like this, or it doesn't appear to be a place like this in Chattanooga at this time. But it's a cool, the place is actually from the early 20th century, and it was a automotive sales place, a car dealership back in the day. There's a great skylight with what's left of those industrial elements, and I think could play would go great in the store. It probably was not always a car dealership. I'm sure it looks like it could have been some type of manufacturing place with that skylight. And this is a place where instead of old rag rugs go to die, this could be where dreams of creating either art some type of art, literary or actually on the canvas, can go to live. So I started the electronic version of it as I add books to my Goodreads account. I'm going to actually add those to my my electronic store, which I've dubbed Chatterbooks and Wineberry, the electronic version. I've added the first trade edition of Toni Morrison's Tar Baby. I added The Hairstons, which is told by Henry Winecheck. It's an American family, both black and white. Evidently, the white Hairstons were at one time one of the largest plantation owners in the country. And in between the Civil War and the Great Depression, that basically decimated their fortune, but not what they seem to think of themselves. But they, as well as the black Hairstons, actually contributed positively to the history of this country from the Revolutionary War on forward. I'm still reading The Library of Auschwitz, and I'm actually looking for my own hardback first edition of that. I'm listening to also Where the Crawdads Sing. I definitely would love my first edition of that, because I think they're getting ready to make it into a movie, as well as Reese Witherspoon's getting ready to make it to a movie, and I'm thinking about probably going and looking up if she's going to have any book signings. I would love to get an autograph edition of that book. Before We Were Yours, which is about children's home, and that's right in Memphis, how they were stealing white kids and basically selling them on the adoption black market. The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead, the Dozier School for Boys, a reformatory school, which was basically a death chamber. It was no better than the concentration camp of Auschwitz from the Nazis. And then his other book, which was the Underground Railroad, where he basically, which was another historical narrative, and Cora, which was the antagonist, how she escaped the violence of slavery, and she had to depend on the goodwill of her white benefactors to just fight for her freedom. Both of them beg to discuss the uncomfortableness of race, and we would love to believe that we live in a colorfully free society, but evidently, no, we do not. We still got racist rants by our dumbass in charge and people saying it's okay that he says the mean and bigoted things that he says. So I think we still need to have those discussions and come to some resolutions, and also penalize people for just stupid behavior. So welcome back to the episode. I will be reading from my book, ABC, Always Be Cute. Hurricane Mara and Grandma M never went out without, it should be their lipstick, and they would say, always present your best foot forward, because you never know who you're going to see. When I met the three losers again, I had Purcell back up and had dropped half a stone in weight because I was always on the go with my family. I would see the ex-military guy at the Austin Grand Hyatt after a run with my brothers. We all would crash into the restaurant for breakfast on the open-air terrace before the Texas sun burned all the coolness out of the air. We were all pretty sweaty. He came over after recognizing me, but I really didn't place him at first. He had changed so much. He looked older, and married life had not done well by him. My older brother is very intuitive and could read anyone. This would help him throughout his career as a ranger and as a private investigator. James looked at him and said, he has the Pinch Herald look of a husband of a nagging wife. Once he reminded me who the heck he was, I introduced him to my brothers. He had the audacity to act jealous because I was with three of the coolest guys in the state, my brothers. He recognized Bryce instantly because of his days with Dallas. His face changed from shock to anger to jealousy to relief, all within a flash. He said, "Oh yeah, they had to be related to you, as if I couldn't pull a good-looking tall man." He was deflecting his own pathetic self-hate. I, on the other hand, looked like the swimmer and runner I'd become to keep up with my brothers. I told my brothers about our brief relationship and would go on to tell him how I lived in Chattanooga and San Padre because of my family. He asked if I was still practicing, and I told him I was chief editor of Health Economics Print and Online and had developed their mobile application. He seemed shocked that I had managed to do all of that in such a short period of time. I, the little nobody from Virginia, had beaten him again, in spite of his refusal to screw me without marrying me. How you like me now, Baldy? The mini reunion was broken up by a short caramel-colored woman who might have been pretty when she was younger. She had creases in her forehead and around her mouth from perpetual disappointment and an everlasting frown. I watched my ex's face drop, and he seemed to withdraw into his own uncertainty. She was really odd. It seemed like she didn't care to be introduced to any of us and didn't expect to be introduced to any of us. My brother stood up respectfully when she came up. She just stood next to him and sighed, and he excused himself, averting his eyes as they left without a goodbye or introduction. We shrugged and shook our heads. If it hadn't been for our family, we could have been trapped and broken individuals too. I would see the bored professional after his toddler son ran into my father while Tony Hurricane and my grandparents were at the Blue Moon in Dallas. I looked happy and flawless, and he looked gray and pinched. After the introductions and the explanation of how I had been united with my birth father and family, he told me how he never fulfilled his dreams of going to medical school. He ended up in retail to his chagrin, and I'm sure his mother's disappointment. He told me I looked about the same as the summer in 1992. I actually wish I had re-edited this and added a little bit more about that past relationship and our ongoing friendship. I think this is the part where you actually think when you do a sequel or when you're just doing a reread how you would have improved upon the book itself, or that it would have been caught in editing that I actually paid for. But anyways, as I walked him out, he whispered, "I have never been as happy as I was that summer. I never found that happiness with anyone since. What happened?" Hurricane, seeing my dilemma, said, "Please tell me you're not mourning the loss of that loser." According to Maura, every professional woman, even of Purcell stock, has to run the gauntlet of losers. You just have to recognize them for what they are and not get stuck. Mara's dating history was more eclectic than mine and more international than mine, but it was still filled with losers. She dated a Chinese ex-ballet choreographer who would admit to his bisexuality and subsequent homosexuality during family reunion after cruising one of more fabulous cousins. He used her as a beard for a number of years, and even after they split because his ultra-conservative family was not accepting of a Texas raisin, they definitely would never accept another man in his life. They still are friends and go to all the Broadway show openings in New York. A British Episcopalian priest marked the start of her religious period. He was remarkably well-read and traveled, but very backward in his beliefs. He was a gun-toting right-wing Republican. He took his move in acclimation to Texas to the extreme. When she was promoted and required to travel, he freaked out when she wouldn't quit her job to marry him and move into the parish. He was eventually arrested in a raid on an extreme militia set compound that was raided by the ATF. He was deported after that and is serving a prison sentence in Great Britain for making threats to Parliament. She hid her success from her Nigerian evangelical minister. He was a self-proclaimed doctor of divinity and never recognized her actual advanced degree. He definitely could not understand her work in genetics and molecular biology. They were dumb when he refused to introduce her to anyone in his home church, and he married a virgin who was chosen for him. She found out about it from an online announcement in the Dallas Morning News. They would divorce less than a year later. And he caught up in a fraud scheme and was eventually also deported. He called her from the detention center to talk about getting Bryce to represent him, pro bono, of course. That would never happen, and she would wave at him as he was led shackled to the prison transporter back to Nigeria. She would marry an ex-linebacker for the Houston Oilers. Their marriage would tank, but she would experience true love and respect. After he began to rage and have bouts of depression, he was diagnosed with that post-concussive syndrome. After their marriage disintegrated, they remained friends, and he was part of a large settlement from the NFL. Miami Not So One-Night Stand would roll up on me having eggs and mimosa with Hurricane Grandma and her sisters during a girls' weekend in South Beach. Of course, I look damn good. My afro was puffy from a series of coconut avo cream rinses and omega oils, and I was wearing my favorite flowy jersey floor-length dress. I said, I thought you hated the beach, but it seems like you're picking up extra hours with the local security company here in South Beach. He told me he had been following me on Instagram and was so happy to hear about me finding my family. He told me I look absolutely radiant. Did you have that inner glow when you were in medical school? I said it was buried under anxiety, depression from always feeling scared I would fail out and have to go back to Virginia to work at Hardee's. We all laughed, and he took one last look at me. I sat in a cloud of coconut and gardenium and wiggled a few fingers goodbye and sat back to enjoy my family. I was able to block out his longing, quizzical look as the platter of fruit and second round of mimosas arrived. Hurricane and Grandma M aptly sized up the situation by stating that confusing lust and hot sex for real connection is always a mistake. Grandma M had been married to my grandfather for more than 60 years and couldn't understand how most couples threw away their marriages like Kleenex. She would stand by the hard work required in a good relationship. She hated what Sex and the City did for the relationship and was ticked at how a fictional character warped an entire generation of young women to think and be shallow. She agreed with the fashion of the skinny white women and the resilience at how they bounced back from their mistakes, but what bothered her the most was the lack of family and how they all slept around with obviously broken individuals. She saw fleeting mothers, and Miranda would have her only child out of wedlock before she married, separated from, and reunited with the kid's father. She envied their sexual freedom and exploration, but she found them all vapid and flawed. They thought skinny-ass Carrie Bradshaw flitting around New York City had fucked up an entire generation of women, one pair of $700 shoes at a time. They all admired Samantha because she put her sexuality out there, but they felt sorry for her when she selected flawed individuals and got burned. Her longest relationship with a fine actor was all they could fantasize about. My grandmother was always a hopeful romantic, and she was always hopeful for finding Big Sam and becoming a part of the Purcell family. Both her younger sisters would marry relatives of the Purcell family, making the close-knit nature of the tribe even more inclusive. Their family fled Algiers, and poverty had almost killed what the war did not. Her parents would remain together for their lives and would spend their last days walking the beach and collecting shells. She was a realist and recognized that not everyone needed to be married to be in a healthy relationship. She was satisfied with her intimate life with Gramps, yuck, but she wished she could have had more time to explore, double yuck. She was hopeful that dating could lead to marriage, but she didn't think it was required in all relationships. She was hopeful for that younger generation. Maura and I and our cousins and our nieces would not opt to skip all the drama because it was a part of life. She always prayed that we would be just as lucky and successful as they were. The family would grow and be positively remembered and replicated, and not only in the conventional sense. And the more and more I read and reread my book, there's so many things that I would have liked to have done for this edition that I think I'll address in the sequel. And who knows? I'm hopeful that someone would see the potential in the book, and probably I can release a second edition. I'm not sure, but it's exciting either way. Also, today I read this week's version of Vanity Fair, and in the back of it, it was the Proust questionnaire that was completed by the Nobel Peace Prize, Maleda Yousefzai. She's a young girl that basically, I don't know if she's Pakistani or from Afghanistan, and she fought for the right to go to school after death threats, etc. So I decided to go ahead and answer these questions of the Proust questionnaire, and they will not be as wholesome as her answers were. The first question was, what is your idea of perfect happiness? I just want to be grateful for what I have. That was actually her answer that I actually stole from her. Sorry. What is my greatest fear? No one will buy my book or read a post on Vocal Plus. Which historical figure do you most identify with? And I couldn't answer that because I needed to look up Calamity Jane or one of the other women shooters in the Wild Wild West. I admire anybody that can handle a gun and do it well. What living person do you most admire? Well, that's, of course, the Michelle Obama and her husband, the great President Barack Obama. What is the trait you most deplore in yourself? Cracking all of my joints. What trait do I deplore in others? Farts and smelly burps. What is my greatest extravagance? Publix cake with vanilla ice cream. That is just a diabetic coma and an insulin drip for waiting. What is the most overrated virtue? Honesty and beauty, which is fleeting. What do you dislike most about myself? Body hair. What living person I most despise? POTUS 45 and his minions and everything they say. Words I most overuse? Awesome. And dumbass. Greatest regret, saving money to buy a newer Class A RV, and I should have started riding seriously sooner. Greatest love of my life hasn't happened yet. When and where I have been most happy now in Tennessee. What talents do I wish I had? I wish I could sing, paint, and play an instrument well. Current state of mind, satisfied. What would I change about myself? My weight, and get electrolysis sooner. What would I change about my family? I wish they had dared and not stayed in Virginia. What is my greatest achievement? Graduating medical school and publishing my book. My most treasured possession, my truck. What is the lowest possible depth of misery? Having anxiety without a concrete focus. That is just pure misery to me. Where I would want to live. On a shore somewhere or within earshot of a waterfall. Favorite occupation, musician and artist. Quality you most like in a man. Honesty and kindness without shade. quality of liking on women, the same values. What do I value in my friends? The same. Who are my heroes? The Obamas and Catherine the Great for different reasons. What are my favorite names? Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg's last name is the bomb. Pearl, Jasmine. What do I mostly dislike? Morning alarms and low balance in my bank account. How would I like to die peacefully? And what's my motto? Let's get her done. And that basically describes how I do everything, and especially as it comes to this podcast, because that is the last part of the podcast that I have to record before I put it all together and I'll actually be able to post it a couple of days early. How about them apples? That's it for this week's podcast of What is Tennessee Fro Reading. Join me next week as I chronicle my travails in my different visits to different waterfalls and to get the perfect fried chicken, but not necessarily in that order. If you could do me a favor, please check out Dale's Angels Inc. For all the latest offers and books and wines and all that, and everything that has to do with smoked salmon and yoga. If you like what you hear, please don't hesitate to navigate to the Podbean site and to become a patron or to purchase individual downloads to the podcast. And someone asked me recently why I love living in Chattanooga, or do I actually like living here? Well, yes, I do. Chattanooga inspires me to create and to write, and it seems that I'm always one book away from my next misadventure. And really, that truly is it for this week. As always, be present, be kind, just don't be stupid.